This week on Out on the Air features local husband-wife musicians Marty and Corinne Lucas with selections from their acoustic-oriented folk band Return to Normal. Plus, Marty discusses his work with optical music recognition of public domain music scores and Corinne's new appointment as executive director for Northern Indiana Community Foundation. Our spotlights on Dune Arts Foundation's special presentation of Two Trains Running, March 24th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight as they start a new season, but actually they're going to host something that's kind of unique from the Dunes Arts Foundation. They're going to be bringing in a show from New York City from the acting company, August Wilson's Two Trains Running, directed by Lily Ann Brown. And they're going to do that before they actually start their regular season. Today we have, of course, Stephen Scott, the artistic director for the Dunes Arts Foundation, and of course, Elise Kamani, the managing director. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and telling about this kind of new venture.
Yeah, aloha both of you. It's nice seeing you.
It's good to see you both too. Well, this is very exciting for us. The acting company has now been around for about 50 years and was started actually as before to accommodate Juilliard school graduates. They put together a company of the recent theater graduates to take them around the country doing usually productions of classics. The company itself has changed. It's not so strongly allied with Juilliard now, but they still do a tour mostly through the Midwest, taking large-scale productions and small productions to various Midwestern cities. And we have been able to secure them for one night in Michigan City on the evening of March 24th at 7 o'clock at the Holdcraft Center, to present a concert reading of one of the plays in their repertoire, Two Trains Running by August Wilson, which I think it's not only a brilliant play, it also reintroduces people to August Wilson, who is a playwright. Although he was very prolific in his career, he may not be somebody that everyone knows now, and he's a very important writer in many, many ways. So we're very excited about being able to sponsor that concert reading on the 24th.
How did that come about?
Well, the managing director of the acting company is actually somebody that I worked with in Chicago years ago, and he called Elise, actually. He had heard about the Dunes from a couple of people who have worked there, heard about its reputation. They were looking for a place to do kind of a layover job between two major engagements, and Michigan City seemed to be the logical place because they're going to be in Michigan and then in Iowa after they're done. So they called us, which was lovely, and we were able to figure out very easily how to do this and when to do it and all of that. So we're very excited because it also means that the Dunes has a good reputation out there, which is great.
Yeah. And the Holdcraft is a very nice facility.
Yes, it's big enough to accommodate the community, which we're really hoping will come out for this. We're
You've made it very accessible by donation, pretty much.
Exactly. It's by donation, starting at $5 all the way up to $50 if you want to help us out. And it's also free to Michigan City area school teachers and students and employees. And this is the Chicago stop. They were trying to get a theater in Chicago, and most of those theaters already were booked up. So we're really happy to be able to host them for their Chicago spot.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. But about half the cast and the director are from Chicago. So we're going to have some Chicago people in the audience, too. It'll be great.
That'd be a great for you. Steve, maybe just give us a thumbnail sketch of what the Two Trains Running is about.
Well, August is famous for his America cycle, which each play shows one decade, or it takes place in a decade of the 20th century, and shows basically the effects of the world politics and national politics and what's going on common people. Two Trains Running takes place in 1969, the year after Martin Luther King's assassination, and a time when the world kind of blew up in terms of the civil rights movement. It takes place in a restaurant in the Hill section of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is where most of August's plays are set. And the plot is actually very simple. The owner of the restaurant is faced with losing his restaurant. Business has died, especially in the last decade. He wants to sell it, but he's in danger of just being taken over by the city and the restaurant torn down. And basically, that provides the story. But the important thing are the people in this restaurant. A restaurant which used to be a community center now has representatives from all facets of the Hill District. A recently released ex-con, an elder man who has very strong religious feelings, a number of people. And it's just kind of a fascinating glimpse of where we were in that decade if we were dealing with the realities of life.
Well, excellent. What a great thing to bring to Dunes Arts Foundation and everything like that. And, you know, we're coming up on our last minute here, and I want to give you a chance to think about what you might have this season. I know you're mulling over it, and we're going to, of course, have you back to talk about the whole season and individual shows. But real quickly, tell us a little bit what's in mind.
Well, I can tell you, I can't tell you titles at this point, but I can tell you that we're opening with a mystery, which I think, and it's a mystery that I think everybody will recognize, and it's really one of the great thrillers of the American stage and the American cinema. The second play is going to be a play by John Patrick Shanley, the author of Doubt. We're looking at another of his plays, which is a kind of romantic comedy set in Ireland. And then the third play will be a musical. And this year, we've done some very serious musicals in the past. This year will be a very happy one, a romantic musical. So we're looking forward to that. And then, of course, we'll be doing our cabaret in August.
That sounds great. It's always a great season and a wonderful location. And, of course, you've renovated many things there and brought it up to snuff quite a bit and everything like that. Again, August Wilson's Two Trains Running, presented by the Dunes Arts Foundation, Monday, March 24th at 7 p.m. at the Holcraft Performing Arts Center. Thank you, Steve and Elise, for coming on Art of the Year Spotlight.
Thank you, Larry and Esther. Thank you.
Yeah, so nice. Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, everyone. This is recording artist David Arkenstone, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM. Thank you.
see. Stars twinkling, we're sparkling.
We are pleased to welcome Martin R. Lucas and Corinne Becknell Lucas to Art on the Air. Corinne has been a professional musician since 1979, playing all genres and influences, and has worked behind the scenes in media production and editing. She has been working in the world of philanthropy and grant programming for over 23 years, and in the process of becoming the executive director, congratulations, by the way, of the Northern Indiana Community Foundation. Marty is also a multi-talented person, lawyer, musician, photographer, and naturalist. Currently, he is producing an extensive collection of music using optical music recognition technology. Marty and Corinne have recorded a series of self-published acoustic electronica under the name Return to Normal. Thank you for both joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Corinne and Marty. It's very wonderful seeing you again.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Great to have you part of the show. Well, we're going to start with Corinne because we already kind of talked about that. Get your origin story and like we said, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, it's been a long time. So going back.
Way back. Childhood, elementary school. Yeah,
absolutely. I played piano. I mean, I was just always passionate about playing an instrument. From as long as I can remember, I come from a musical family. So as soon as I was able to be able to sit up tall enough at the piano and take lessons, I was all about it. So I did that, you know, up and through my high school years. I accompanied people. My brother was a singer. And so he drugged me out when I was nine. And he was in a band called the Now Singers. Mm. And it was about the Up With People time, you know, that. Yeah. Whole 1971 and two. And so I was just a little kid. And so I was playing all kinds of, you know, complicated music, mostly because my brother just was making me do it. But, you know, it was great because that was such a great, lesson and pathway into
Were you performing with him?
Yeah, I was playing the piano. I was accompanying him and his group sometimes, you know. And so no one questioned that I was a kid. I don't know. I think back then everybody was just probably still the same, huh? They're just glad somebody can play the piano. I was always playing the piano. So I was a rainbow girl. I was always the piano player playing Claire de Lune. I was like, dear, please, not again. But and then, of course, and also and played a lot of, you know, played brass instruments. I was a band geek. Loved it. Loved all that so much. And then when I was in high school, a group of friends, I'm from a small town, Bourbon, Etna Green, Indiana. And my high school friends were asked to try to play for a girl. I think she was trying out for, what was it called? Like, oh, the beauty pageant, Young Miss or something. I don't remember, Junior Miss. And so we all kind of got together and played Lucy in the Sky. I had like a makeshift, like, keyboard with a mic hanging in front of it. And we had a bass player and a drummer and a guitar player. And I remember we got done that one afternoon and we all went, you know, we can do this. We can do this. So we just started
There's
playing.
More than Claire de Lune.
Oh, thank God. So we used to play at other schools, you know, dances and proms. And we had a lot of work actually. And so and you know how that goes. I don't know if anybody's a rock and roller, but once you do that, then you're just in. So pretty much did that for a long time. And I guess I'm still doing it, right? You know, with just a different morph of that whole thing. And during that whole journey, I met up with Marty because I had kids then. And I'm like going, it was hard to do that and have little kids. But I was like, I got to do it. You know, you're compelled to do it. So I went to the music store. Bill Wagner had a music store in Plymouth. And I said, all right, Bill, I'm ready. He goes, I know this guy. I'll give you his name. He's looking for somebody. I go, okay. So I called Marty and we talked for like hours, I think, the first time. And so that's how Marty and I met. And we started playing then in about 1984, I think. And then we've done all kinds of things since then. You know, we played in... we did a lounge thing for a while and played in, you know, in clubs as a lounge act. And we did a all electronica thing where we played at WVPE. We are called Control Z then. And and then at some point we started playing guitar. And just because we always say it's too hard to take that piano out to the fire, you know. So we started playing guitar, and then we've been doing. We were just counting the other day. I can't believe how long it's been now. But I can't say I'm just a new guitar player anymore.
Oh gosh, that's just so sweet. That's like the sweetest story. I want to ask something completely frivolous. Okay.
Sure.
I'm going to go into the like extremely frivolous, but you were talking about the 70s, which is what prompted this. So, and also we spoke with Felix Cavallari of the Rascals. And if you remember those Young Rascal albums with their costuming, what was your costuming in all these iterations, I guess? So
oh
in the
70s, gosh.
Like you're talking about like girl band, right? In the 70s.
Well, I was the only girl in the band.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I've always had guy buddies, you know, but anyway, that's a great question, because actually in 1970, I think it was eight. Ooh, I can't remember. We went, my uncle, who's a professor, was on sabbatical in London. So we went to visit him, and my dad, God love him, he bought me a pair of boots.
Go-go boots.
They were all the way thigh boots, though, all the way up to the top. And they had super tall heels. So I wore those. I mean, seriously, are you kidding me? I couldn't believe he was like, I was like, really? He goes, sure. My parents were so supportive. They would go down in the basement and we'd practice at our house. And people in the neighborhood could hear us in the country, miles away. We just played so loud. And they were so patient. They just didn't listen. And they went to every gig I ever had. Any sleazy bar, they were there. God bless them.
Oh, gosh, Corinne, that just sounds so ideal.
Well, we want to move on to Marty, though, and give him a chance to tell his origin story, because we kind of got how you guys got together. So, Marty, tell us your origin story.
Well, I can skip over a whole lot of stuff now. I can say that. I first played music as a kid. I was in the church choir. I know Corinne was too, Methodist. We both, not the same Methodist church, but a Methodist church. And then I was in band. And similarly, North Judson, where I grew up, had a surprisingly good band at that time. Now, that music education is not what it was at the time, I'm sorry to say, particularly in small towns, because they made the thing where you couldn't be an athlete and be a musician both, which, you know, is fine maybe when you're like at the varsity level, but I disagree with that at the younger level rather vehemently. But anyway, that's another thing. I played brass at that time. And then actually at one point I started getting interested in jazz. I always liked jazz. I liked jazz even as a little kid. But I started getting interested in learning to play it. And I really couldn't do a whole lot on a brass instrument by myself. So I put a little tape, you know, well, it wasn't that little of a tape recorder. We had a nice reel-to-reel tape recorder at our house. This is back in the late 60s, actually. I'm a little older than Corinne. She says, a lot old. Fair enough. You know, so I put the tape recorder that we had there to work by recording piano parts that I would work up so I could play along with that on my brass instrument, which was a valve trombone, was the one I used for jazz, kind of an obscure instrument that you probably have never even seen anyone play. maybe you have, Larry. I don't know.
Maynard Ferguson.
True. Same time period. So it wasn't too long before I was going, you know, actually this piano is a lot more interesting to play than that brass instrument. And so I gravitated to playing keyboards, and I played keyboards in rock and roll bands too. When I went to IU, I started out a year at Purdue, and then I decided I didn't really care for that much. And I made the wise decision to go to Bloomington, live there. And was part of a really vibrant music scene that Bloomington had at that time. Including, though, academics. You know, I was lucky enough to take Dave Baker's jazz improv course. He was definitely one of the world's foremost jazz and, you know, improvisation teachers. I was clearly the worst player in the entire class, because everybody else was a music student but me. I was an anthropology student. However, you know, I learned that I did have some skills as a musician, because while I was the worst player, I was the best at music theory. So and Dave Baker came to see my rock and roll band play, which I was kind of knocked out by. You know, it was so exciting seeing him out there and enjoying it. He was very open-minded. Even, you know, we were a rock and roll band, you know, but and then from then on, I met Carl Malamud while at college, and that was important because Carl ended up becoming one of the most advanced people in developing the internet for multimedia, for audio especially, and with him I produced the first podcast. It's called Geek of the Week, featuring Carl Malamud. We didn't call it a podcast. We called it multicasting. And personally, I still prefer the term multicasting. I think podcasting sounds like, you know, you're some kind of invader from outer space. But or maybe they were. I don't know. You know. But that led to us doing, you know, Crit and I doing Control-Z, because we were the house band for the Internet Multicasting, which had its studio above a Chinese restaurant on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. And we did a lot of production for that, including with some other people, and it got, you know, a lot of you know, attention. We also played live at Interop in Las Vegas, and were probably the first live musicians on the internet. A lot of times they say the Rolling Stones were the first, but they were actually a little after us. But people noticed that somehow a little more. I take exception.
Darn.
I mean, what can you say? I mean, but we actually did that, and it wasn't many people that could listen to it then. I think at the time, you know, we were being cast worldwide, but there was like 9 people that had enough bandwidth to actually do that. So, you know, it was like at MIT, somebody did it, at University of Illinois, they could listen. That's about it, you know. And anyway, we kept doing that for a long time. And then one day, you know, we decided that we wanted to go, and it wasn't just that we wanted to be able to go by the campfire and play, but that was part of it. We wanted to get in touch with wooden instruments again, and we thought everybody else was having a lot of fun playing the guitar, and we'd start doing that too. I was just talking to her about, you know, Ralph Towner, who played with Paul Winter. He was the guitar player, and he had been a keyboard player all his life, and then he decided to play guitar, and then he was really good right away. And so I was kind of thought, well, you know, I'm not Ralph Towner, but it's, you can make that transition even a little later in life. And so we did that. And then we made those records. And, you know, like I said, and as you said, now my main thing is doing optical music recognition, once again with Carl Malamud, all these years later.
Wow. Excellent. Well, real briefly, and maybe Corinne will have you set this up. Your band name is Return to Normal, the two of you gone. But also I want to talk about Dream Sea Serenade off the Dream Sea album. Briefly tell that, and then we'll listen to that.
Yeah, so, you know, Marty's the principal songwriter in our group. But that was actually inspired by a DJ on another public radio station.
Let's name names. It was Al Canola.
It was Al Canola who said, you know, that he wanted to hear us do some Stephen Foster.
Ah.
So we thought, Stephen Foster, that's good. That's out of that's in the public domain, way in the public domain. So we took that and kind of moved it around, and Marty came up with the words, and so we came up. I think it's really sweet.
It's got this sweet lullaby feel.
Well, let's take a listen to it. This is a Dream Sea Serenade. Corinne is the main vocalist on the Dream Sea album from Return to Normal.
Beautiful dreamer on a dream sea, stars twinkling, waves sparkling, hypnotically. The noise of the city is gone with the day. The surf on the shoreline is far, far away. Beautiful dreamer, prince of my night, can you still see me in blue light, cast in the realm of your inner eyesight? Beautiful dream. dream peacefully.
And that was Dream Sea's Serenade, about the Dream Sea album from Return to Normal. Corinne was on the vocal there.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with mermaids and narwhals.
Narwhals.
Good job on the remake of that.
I want to give a tip of the hat on that one to the fact, you know, the production of it, the arrangement was inspired by Laura Nyro's record with LaBelle. Yeah, you know, which is a record that is, you know, often turns up in a cutout bin or something, or has, but it's, I think, a really fabulous piece.
You do it beautifully.
Thank you.
Well, and you also performed together. I mean, I think we're going to listen to one from the Overflown album, Consuming. But, you know, tell us about, like, you know, when you're working together on that plane and everything, how's that dynamic work?
I laugh because he's always like, don't scowl at me. But I do it with a lot of love. But yeah, I mean, we've been playing together so long that we just always just kind of meld and know what each other's going to do. But I laugh because it seems like when one of us messes up, we both mess up at the same time. You think somebody could give us a break. But yeah, we play. I mean, I think as a musician, I mean, you're compelled to play. I mean, we just have to play. We just have to play in front of people. We want to do it. So we play in the summer at farmers markets, and we play down at Broad Ripple at Plum Slash Shot because that's family too. And so we like a really relaxed atmosphere. Play all kinds of places. We'll play anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, that's for sure.
How did you bounce to Return to Normal for this current pairing?
So we had... when we were first learning, you know, that, you know, God bless the internet, because it helps you to know songs and get chords. And there used to be a website called Chordy. And Chordy, which I don't even know is around anymore, but you could manipulate it. And then if you wanted to go back to the way it was originally, after you changed keys or whatever, there was a thing at the top that said return to normal.
Oh.
And so we thought that would be a cool name.
How do you use your process? Do you, songwriting is not always like you create it. Do you actually publicly play it maybe a little bit to work out the dynamic? I know we just interviewed a group called The Empty Pockets, and that's kind of their creative process. They write this stuff kind of collaborative, but then they don't really record it until they actually perform it for some time, and then they decide. Is that kind of your process, or what do you work on that?
Well, that might be a smarter way to do it. That's not what we do. I mean, most of our songs are written based on they're actually written as part of the recording process, and then we go back and come up with a way to play it live, because I don't want to be limited in my palette of sounds, you know, that way. And that we do songs that we could never play live. I mean, there's some of our stuff we could never play live. Other things are, you know, some of them are rather complicated and difficult. They're not the kind of song you come up with collaboratively, like a song, for example, Platinum Moon on the Blinkin' and the Brackens record. We had a friend over in Wales, actually, that we did some stuff with, and he tells us, I'm going to learn that song and do that at the next one of my shows. And I was going, okay. And he, you know, then a few days later, he goes, wait, that's really hard. I mean, they're pretty complicated a lot of times, actually. Not always. And that's not always something to strive for, don't get me wrong. But one of our primary touchstones, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, Karen, one of the primary things that we go for is, right or wrong, we don't want to sound like anybody else. We want to have our unique sound, even if everybody hates it. That's fine. You know?
Yeah, well, maybe talk about, because this is the one that you're also vocally on, is Consuming, and that's from your Overflown album. And tell us a little about the background of both the album and that song, and we'll take a listen to that.
Well, you know, that, like a lot of them, starts out with a lyric, honestly. And I'm, you know, in terms of songwriting technique, I would say probably the songwriter that I'm the most influenced by would be Joni Mitchell. Because what she tried to do is write something with a story quality to it. Not necessarily, sometimes they're narrative stories, and many of my favorite songs that I wrote are narrative stories. Like, you know, like for example, Little Tea House. It's a whole story, but in terms of songwriting, you get so that the words are working. And then you let those words tell you what the song should be. It should sort of reflect the way that a person would phrase those words, or, you know, a sort of a theatrical approach to those words. Now, that's what I like to do, but it's interesting. It's completely opposite. If you listen to, like, you know, Bernie Taupin and Elton John does just the opposite. He seems to do, like, something that makes no relationship whatsoever to the way that the words are written. But I like the Joni Mitchell approach better, which is where you try to make the words reflect. You try to make the melody, you know, reflect that, and then the chords are designed to carry that melody in an interesting way, hopefully.
Very good.
One of the things that we do in the recording process too is I take a lot of the vocals, even if I'm not singing. I really like singing backup. It's really my favorite thing to do, and singing harmonies and complex harmonies. So that's usually my realm. And so, like, especially on Consuming, you know, it's like a call and response.
Right.
And so, you know, and sometimes I like just making sounds. And so you'll hear that a lot in our recordings that have a kind of a melody to it, but yet they're just like an additive to the song.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Consuming from the Overflown album, both with Marty and Corinne.
Nice and old and warm, and a love that's consuming. The only
was consuming from the Overflown album. And our guests today, Marty and Corinne Lucas on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
That was really sweet. Corinne, did you contribute to the lyrics at all on that one?
I didn't on consuming, except wanting dahlias in the garden, I think. Marty and my son bought me a bunch of dahlias for Mother's Day, and I think that contributed to it.
She also contributed in her, you know, her predilection for Pinot Noir.
Oh, true. Gosh, thanks.
I mean, that's your favorite flavor. You know,
it's true.
Kind of wine, right? Nothing wrong with that.
No.
You're way over 21.
I am.
Well, you touched on this briefly. What would you, if you can, classify your genre? I mean, what is your genre? Or maybe you don't have an, or which crossover genres do you hit?
Well, we usually qualify ourselves, we call ourselves jazz-infused folk. And the reason is the content is clearly in the folk tradition. I didn't mention about my, like, fascination with folk as a child. I mean, rock and roll was coming on, but I really was more into listening to folk when I was a kid, you know. And so the content is very much folk-oriented. But you know, I studied jazz theory, and, you know, everything is that we do is built on that, even if it's a simplified thing. But yeah, so it's jazz infused folk. Maybe a lot of people wouldn't hear the jazz in there, but it's there.
It also seems like this jazz, strong jazz background that you have sort of informs what you're doing now, working with all these sounds. I just think it's so, like, when we met, it's just so intriguing what you're doing with these silent film music and retranslating it. I don't know if this is a good time to talk about what you're working on right now, but I just find it thrilling.
Well, I'm looking forward to, hopefully we'll have time. I haven't had time to do much else other than that for a couple of years. That's about the only, you know, it's been all encompassing because it's, well, frankly, it's a job. I mean, they actually pay me for that. Nobody pays me to write songs, you know. I would be happy to if somebody wanted to hire me. But it's been really great for my understanding of orchestration. I mean, my level, you know, I've been just bathed in orchestration. And starting out with before we did the silent movie stuff, we also did a lot of stuff like Chopin and Bach and, all the classical music and a lot of folk music also from Europe or European folk music. So I learned to work with strings and you know, orchestral woodwinds at a level I wasn't able to do before. I hope we'll get a chance to put that into a Return to Normal record before we're too old to do it.
And what's the process in doing that? You know, would you listen? How does that work? You know, like, give us a day in the life of doing that process.
OMR.
Yeah.
OMR. Okay, here's how it works real quick. I'll try to do it kind of quick because it's a bit of an involved process. But it starts out with a collection of actual music from the time period. This is, you know, actual sheet music. We're using orchestral pieces. It's a pit orchestra, what they call a theatrical orchestra. But I always heard it called a pit orchestra, a small orchestra. And they vary in size a little bit. And then those are scanned in with a, you know, high quality scans. And then those scans are run through an OMR process called SoundSlice. It's based in the Netherlands. And that produces something that's all messed up that I go through and edit and try to fix. I shouldn't say it's all messed up. It's gotten pretty good. But, you know, it always does require editing. If people might think you press a button and this comes out. It doesn't that way at all. Then you take these individual sheets. Now, in the case of pit orchestra music from the silent music era, there's no score. You know, everybody probably knows what a score is. The score is what the conductor uses, and it has all the parts. And part of that is that those parts are all written in the same key. They're all written in concert pitch, whereas the individual players aren't seeing the music in concert pitch. So I got to turn everything into concert pitch. And then I essentially assemble the score of these, which they've never been scored before, really, in Dorico, which is a music notation program. And I go through and make sure all the structure of the piece is correct. And I fix a lot of errors that creep in. Sometimes they creep in from the scanning process, but other times there were mistakes in the score, in the actual original pieces, and the musicians would have gone, oh, wait, no, they meant that to be a flat there. They didn't notate it, whatever. And I have to find those. And then I take all that export it as a MIDI file, and move that into Logic 11, which is the Apple-based program, and I assign sampled instruments, high-quality sampled instruments to each one of those, and then I make a mix a recording of that, and hopefully it sounds a lot like the piece. And, you know, I have found a couple of these where there were pieces from the time period, and they do sound similar. But the style of music has changed some, so I can't really wrap my head around the style that they did in, you know, 1917, but we can certainly get the notes.
I don't know, Marty. For me, it sounds like, you know, we all hear about the nuns and their bridge playing. I think you've got it beat with OMR. And your brain is going to be very healthy.
It definitely, you know, it's definitely been an exercise. I tell you what, every day and, you know, working with that. But it's come a long ways. And the guy that, you know, Adrian Hovati, that is the programmer, who's also a gypsy guitar player, an amazing gypsy guitar player. The work he's done there, it really is amazing. And it's really, you know, one of the things about I want to mention about OMR real quick that I think is interesting. People hear this, oh, it's artificial intelligence. Well, in a way, it is. There's a whole lot of human involved to get it out the door. But what is neat about it is, for example, when doing like a Chopin piano piece, it's an opportunity to hear Chopin without a human interpreting it. And that is actually kind of cool because we think of these things and people rise up the profession by having kind of maybe flashy interpretations. Well, right. The computer doesn't care about that. And maybe we're closer to Chopin than what we ever thought we could be. And so it has an artistic value too, I think.
Oh, that's really interesting. So I'd like to talk about another overflown song, which is Rusty Screen Door. Can you kind of talk to us about that?
I'll say something real quick about that one. That one thing about this one, that's one that we play live a lot. We've played it live a lot for the entire period, so it's kind of different. So, Corinne.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, Marty wrote this song, but this is one that got radio play right away. We set this into our local radio, public radio, and then I was in the kitchen making biscuits and listening to his show, and all of a sudden here we are, you know, on the radio. I know, so cool. It's like, whoa, check it out. So I think I think they liked it because it's bluesy, you know, it's kind of bluesy and has that blues thing, but it's fun to play. And like Marty said, gosh, it's gone through many iterations because we played it probably in the 80s, huh?
Yeah, we'd been playing it for a few years before we put it on that record. So, yeah, that goes way back.
It's changed.
We have a couple pieces like that, like calendars like that, too. We played that a really long time.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Rusty Screen Door from the Overflown album, from with our guests today, Marty and Corinne Lucas.
Dark clouds, thunder, hail and rain. It's hardly a day at all. Me dog tugging at a heavy chain, barking at footsteps in an empty hall, barking at the sound of my footsteps, and that's all. Cause it's pouring down in muddy water, a dirty mother stain. Everything I had I ventured, nothing have I gained. It's been such a long time. Yeah, it's been such a long time. So long. Thank you. tunnel. I see them black and white, momentary fragments and dirty little scenes. Now softly faded grays from the deep shades of green. Outside of your rusty screen door, outside of your screen door, but no
Rusty Screen Door from the Overflown album, and our guests today, Marty and Corinne Lucas on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Those moody, dark clouds. But I also want to say that Kay West Hughes, a shout to Kay for doing the photography on that album cover. I just adore Kay.
Oh, we do too. And when we were putting it up, so it's really interesting that you picked some songs from there, because that first record is way different than later. Because that was more, you know, our recording and our equipment got way better. But we were like going, gosh, do you think Kay would let us use some of her artwork? You know, I just love that one on the back cover with the jets and the, I love
it. Yeah,
that.
She's so talented.
We were just hoping we didn't end up in one of her, like, you know, exhibits, like 14 places to eat, you know. Still Christmas or something. We are musicians.
But, you know, we probably, like, in these last minutes or so, we should probably touch on two things. One, Marty, your photography, and then Corinne, your philanthropy.
First. Well, let's take Marty first, because I'm a photographer also.
Well, you know, I am an avid photographer, as you can see, but, you know, but I use it for a purpose. I have a purpose. And it goes back when I first, you know, when I was just a kid and I was getting interested in photography, my dad gave me this book from Kodak in 1936, something like that. And it's, you know, how to take pictures. And it said the first thing you need to do is you need to have a purpose when you take pictures. And I thought, wow, what a great idea, having a purpose. And after all these years, that still influences me, because, why do I take pictures? I do these pictures of macroinvertebrates, you know, and I basically... The purpose of my photos is to document the relationship between macroinvertebrate species and plants that they have an association with, often pollinating, but that's not the only kind of association. And so I focused on that, and I focused entirely on doing that in Northwest Indiana, sand country sites. Now, people, you're used to the dunes, of course, but there's actually more to sand country than just the dunes. There's also the dunes. There's also the sand country south of the Kankakee River. And that's where I've photographed. And it's a very species diverse area. And I like to think that, you know, I'm really contributing. And it's neat because I'm able to actually interact with some of the foremost entomologists really in the world, because I'm providing them information they can use. So yeah, I really enjoy that.
Well, real quick, before we let you go on that, move on. Marty, what equipment do you use? We have a lot of photographers that listen. So what do you use?
I figured you'd ask me. I'm not even always sure what I'm using, but I'm using a Nikon D850 right now. And a macro lens, I don't know. Kind of, you know, I'm not sure. Right. It was one that I could afford, you know. And of course, I'm also using Photoshop, you know, extensively to process the images. Now, one thing about my photography that's a little unusual, I have a couple of rules I apply that nobody else probably that I know of it does this. One, I don't touch the insects, you know. And number two, I don't use artificial lighting. And so I really try to capture the insects, maybe not even aware of my existence. If ideally, I try to capture a really naturalistic point of view on it.
And Corinne, tell us about your endeavors.
Sure. So I work at the Northern Indiana Community Foundation. I am currently the associate director and a program officer here at the Community Foundation. We're a three-county community foundation. We're Fulton, Miami, and Stark counties. And I was the first person they hired in Stark County when they got the Community Foundation just going, and have moved on up, you know. And I think I've done everything around here. I did, you know, scholarships and grants and marketing, and then back and forth. So I'm really excited and really honored and just humbled to be the executive director that starts at the end of April.
That's excellent. Yeah. Well, in our final moments here, I want to give you a chance to tell people how they can find out more about both of you or you on any of your endeavors, websites, contact information, and, you know, listen to your albums.
Yeah, well, I always direct people to Bandcamp because you can get all of our stuff there. And then we do have a Facebook page, and that's Return to Normal. We try to put all our gigs on there. Okay. And we usually start about March. Well, it'll probably be April.
Before. Yeah, a little warmer.
And Corinne's still recovering from that voice. And her voice isn't what it was. But it'll come back.
Yeah. It'll come back. It's getting better. But yeah, and oh, and Marty, tell them about all the different services they can use.
Well, yeah, you can, for one thing, you can go to M. Lucas on SoundCloud, and there's like a vast number of things there, including links to the OMR stuff. And then there's also, we're also on Free Music Archive. We have some music on Free Music Archive, all of which is free to download. And so that includes some another record that we didn't actually even give you called Concise, which is instrumental pieces, which are, you know, great for background of an ad or something. And then you can also get us on you can get us on Amazon just by, if you have Amazon Unlimited, just say, you know, dyslexia. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Get in trouble. You can't say your name, though. You'll set her off. You know, her name. And then, you know, play music by Return to Normal. And she might play something else first to stop her and have her do it the second time. Then she'll do it. You know, it's funny. You know, but yeah, you can get it that way.
iTunes,
right. So we're widely available, actually.
That's great. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing not only your music, but your whole stories. Marty and Corinne Lucas and their band has returned to normal, and there's a whole bunch of other things they've done and we've talked about. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your arts journey, your music journey, and everything with our audience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was so enjoyable. It went too fast.
Thanks.
Awaken to me, unto me.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.